The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
A record high for the Dow and the S&P 500 Friday as economic hopes got a boost from a hefty gain in U.S. hiring.
It does actually put the Fed into taper mode. Even the most dovish on the Fed, Governor Weller, has already argued that these kinds of job gains, 2 months of them in July and August, would be enough to justify the tapering talk for September announcement. And I think that's what we're going to be focused on. This opens the door to that.
What this does more than anything is it causes a big shift in the leadership of this stock market. You can see this already where the Nasdaq's off a lot this morning, and small cap stocks, their futures are way up. The S&P's not doing much, but the undertow here has shifted towards cyclicals and smalls, and maybe even international markets to some degree, those more sensitive to the economy, and away from defensive and growth stocks, which have been leading for a while here. And, you know, I think that's the undertow. I think the other thing this does is sort of calm down these COVID fears a little bit and reminds people that there's still an incredible fundamental story here going on, not only being reported by company earnings, but now on Main Street as well, and calms some of those fears.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Welcome to our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today we're going to discuss some of the cross currents affecting the markets and the economy and how we at Financial Sense Wealth Management are thinking about the current investment landscape. If you aren't already, I would highly encourage you to both watch and subscribe to our weekly investment videos where we display a lot of the information that we're going to discuss today. Those videos can be found easily by either going to our homepage or by going to our YouTube channel. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy today's conversation between our CIO, Chris Poplava, and Senior Portfolio Manager, Frank Barbera.
Frank, I'd like to get your perspective on the stock market because from my vantage point, and this is something we discussed at our weekly meeting, there's so many cross currents where it's kind of, it's very hard to make a clear case, whether you're a bull or a bear, that there's a lot of kind of conflicting messages. So I'd like to kind of get your take on what you're seeing from a technical perspective on the stock market.
I agree with you. I think this is a time where there are a lot of cross currents and a time to maybe throttle down and go a little slow. That doesn't necessarily mean the market's going to go down, but it is a point where there are a lot of unknown variables working. I'll give you a quick list. On the technical front, and I'm not a bear, by the way. I am still a bull. I still think this market is probably heading up towards 5,000 on the S&P in the medium term, but I do think we could see a correction. So I would characterize myself as neutral right now, maybe in the bit of a correction camp. And here's why. And that may be totally wrong. I'll also say that in the same breath. But here's why I feel the way I do. When you look at the S&P and the major market averages, we've had a very strong year. The market has gone up in an almost uninterrupted fashion, which is wonderful, but it's also pretty rare. And most of us are always, we have this proclivity where we're completely focused on price all the time, especially technicians. I'm very guilty of that. But also sometimes we overlook time. And right now, when I look at time, I can measure. The stock market has a habit of moving back and forth in little mini cycles where it gets overbought technically and then oversold. And it's like a pendulum that just goes back and forth like a heartbeat. And so if you look at something like a momentum indicator, like the 9-day RSI, which is the relative strength index, which is just a very, very common momentum indicator, that's usually oversold around 30, overbought around 70. Well, we've kind of gotten down into the high 30s a couple of times in the last few months, but we actually have not seen a fully oversold reading under 30, a closing value on that gauge in what is now 191 trading days. I can take that back to 1970, and we're in the top 15 streaks, longest streaks with no oversold reading on the 9-day RSI right now at that 191-day mark. Now, have there been times where it's gone longer? You bet. There have been times where it's almost, you know, gone 50% longer. But for the most part, at 191 days, we're kind of in the wheelhouse of 190 to 205, 210, where, you know, a pretty good chunk of the time, you're going to get some kind of a movement down to correct out some of the excesses. And I see the same kind of long dated time span in a bunch of indicators. I keep a 25-day advanced decline oscillator that has not been fully oversold in a year. There are weekly gauges that you can use, and you can plot some of these across an entire century. I have a gauge that I look at where I calculate the high. You look at the high of each week, the low of each week, and then you calculate the weekly median. So what's the average price for each week? And then was the median up or down for that week? And the gauge is called the weeks up per 2 years. Now, I know that sounds like a really strange gauge, but we know there's 104 weeks in a 2-year period of time. And what happens is the indicator just says how many of those trailing 104 weeks had a positive up close. Well, right now we've had very high percentile on that gauge for a record amount of time, something that if you were looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which goes back to 1920, or the S&P back to 1950, you would find this kind of a streak only a handful of times. And we're pushing one of the longer streaks right now where it's been really pinned up at the high end of the range for quite some time. So all of there's a mass of this stuff. And what it really says is the market has not seen a real bout of selling pressure in quite a while, and that something like that could be, you know, at this stage of the game, somewhat overdue. A couple of days back, Stephen Suttmeyer at Bank of America did a study on the S&P with its 200-day average, and he said there's been no down close below the 200-day average now in a very long day. I don't have the exact number of days, but it's since June of 2020. This year, for the entire first half of the year, is one of only 35 of the last 93 years where the S&P stayed above its 200-day average the first half of the year. That study went from 1929 to 2021. Now, the second, when it's been above the 200-day average the first half of the year, when you look at the second half of the year, only 35 basically only 22 times out of the 35 was it able to, 22 times out of 35, it could not stay above the 200-day average in the second half of the year. And only 13 years of 35 years did it manage to stay above the 200-day average the entire year. So it says there's a 60% chance that the S&P could pull back to the 200-day average in the second half of the year. And right now, the 200-day average is about, you know, 12% below where we are right now. Now that might sound scary, but it's really not, because what can happen is you could have a 6 or 7% pullback in prices. And then prices could just chug sideways for a couple of weeks. And I figured, you know, if we pull back to 4,100 on the S&P, and then we just stayed there for 6 or 7 weeks, by mid to late September, you could easily be touching the 200-day average, and you would have had a 6 to 7% correction. And you know what? In the scheme of things, that's no big deal at all. That doesn't mean anything. That's commonplace in the stock market. So, and that would probably set the market up for another leg higher and maybe materially higher. So I think technically we can see things that say go slow. Then you look around the world, you look at the coronavirus. I am seeing some bearish divergence on some momentum indicators right now. And the last time the coronavirus appeared in February of 2020, we had some similar setups. So there's a little negative there. And the virus itself, you know, while, you know, a big chunk of the population is heavily vaccinated or has antibodies from having COVID in the first round, which probably means, and thankfully, mercifully enough, that, you know, we won't see as many people dying, hopefully a great many less people dying from this, and maybe a great many less people getting seriously sick. It's still a potential headwind in the sense that having a virus floating around that could be dangerous tends to inhibit people. I think there's a natural tendency for them to, you know, dial down their activity a little bit and try to hope that they don't get sick. So that's another reason why, with the case count at least still moving up in a number of places, where it could be a period where it pays to just be a little bit more cautious. And I like to use the analogy of the Titanic. You know, the Titanic went steaming into an ice field at night, and there were warnings, and they were at full speed. And that wasn't the brightest idea in the world. You know, it's better if you get that kind of a warning to just slow the ship down and go very slowly. And I think that's sort of the environment we're in right now, Chris.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today at 888-486-3939. Let us work together to help you get on the path to success. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow at financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
These new platforms are really being fueled by three technology shifts. The first one is the falling cost of DNA sequencing and synthesis. The second shift is convergence with artificial intelligence. And then third, the automation of biological data collection and manipulation in the lab itself. And each of those technologies is following a Moore's Law trend line in falling costs and exponential increases in performance. So in essence, these information technologies are converging with biological science and providing the ability to program the basic building blocks of life.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Because there are some potential warning signs, you know, there's obviously are not arguing for us to go full speed ahead. There's some definite cross currents that are of concern. One being the spike in the repo market. Another one is looking at credit spreads. They have not recovered from the recent decline like the stock market has. So it is a bit of a mixed bag. And whenever you're kind of in that situation, I definitely think it makes sense to dial down the risk until there's a clear picture out there. Outside of looking at time, what are you seeing in the market that would suggest we could be in store for a correction? Are you seeing breadth weakening in various measures? Are there certain markets that are giving you some, you know, anxiety in terms of the outlook? You know, what's kind of leading you in that direction that we might have a pullback?
I think you hit it on the head. You know, you were right on the money pointing out crypto. Crypto seems to have been a pretty good leading gauge ahead of time, and there's been a big pullback there. I do see some weakness in breath, which is not to the breath has been remarkable over the course of this cycle in the last 12 months. So it's actually amazing that we haven't seen any real weakness. And even at that, the weakness in breadth is modest, but the weekly advanced decline line, and I will say, you know, I track my own stuff. I use a fixed universe, and I adjust out the digitalization factor of stocks. So I use a fixed percentage. If a stock is up 40 bips on a week or down 40 bips on a week, that moves it to definitive up or down territory. One of the things we've seen on a lot of these widely watched technical gauges is that over time, what used to be 20 to 22% of the market was the unchanged issues column. When we went to digitalization in 2001, we wiped out the unchanged column, and unchanged stocks today are like 3%. And that's, so I went back and I just restored a database that tracks, and it also adjusts out for a big influence of foreign IPOs, which really don't trade and can trade up a penny or down a penny in a given day and have a big impact on distorting things. So what I'm seeing in my work is some drawdown in breadth, some drawdown in momentum. I think breadth might have peaked for the cycle, but that's normal before an important high, about 4 to 6 months before an important high. So that doesn't mean you run out of the market. That means that, you know, it's just going to shift. We're seeing a lot of rotation. Valuations are clearly stretched. But for the most part, I just think we're going to have a correction. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not sure I'm even right. I mean, we've had really not much of a net gain since mid-July to now. We've been trapped in a range for about 9 days. I think on the monetary front, the ADP report yesterday was very weak on job creation, and non-farm payrolls is coming out Friday. Earlier this week, we had a Fed governor out talking about non-farm payroll growth. And he said, well, if that can get up to, you know, higher levels, like a million jobs, supposed to be 787,000 soon, this next report, if it exceeds that, he said, then maybe they'll taper. And I think there is this sort of lingering tapering risk out there that could be there. And I'm also thinking that somewhere in the job market, we might see a big push because a lot of states are eliminating the unemployment benefits that have been in place for a long time. And with the school year starting very soon, a lot of, if the schools reopen, a lot of moms will no doubt want to go back to work. So I think we could see a pretty big upsurge in jobs over the next 2 or 3 months. Maybe it's a little bit delayed, but at some point that could bring on a little taper tantrum as well. So I think there's some reasons to go slow, but there's also a lot of pockets to find good value. And I don't see any reason why, you know, anything happening right now would derail the opportunity to make solid returns, continue to make solid returns this year. It's just a question of maybe being a little bit careful for a little while longer, kind of working our way through the ice field, if you will.
One of the markets that, you know, we've discussed in our meetings over the last couple of weeks has been the crypto market, because you had cryptos, to me, a good sign of overall liquidity. You know, liquidity was so ample late last year, going into this year, and we saw Bitcoin surge over 60,000, but it fell over 30%, kind of hugging that 30,000 mark, and it just wasn't rallying. And I was concerned that Bitcoin could see a sizable drop below that if it didn't get off the ground, and that would obviously be a lot of destruction in terms of value, as the crypto market had exceeded over $1 trillion in market cap. But we've seen Bitcoin surge back; it's now back above 40,000. And part of why I'm kind of interested in it is a sign of market liquidity. If you overlay the 10-year treasury yield, there's a lot of similarity in terms of its price structure as Bitcoin. And with Bitcoin starting to surge, I'm wondering if that might be a harbinger that we may be near a bottom in interest rates. And looking at the 10-year, just like Bitcoin couldn't substantially fall below 30,000, it looks like the 10-year treasury is having a hard time dipping significantly below its current low of, you know, roughly around 1.1, 1.15, almost looks like a double bottom to me. I'm kind of curious what you see in terms of the price structure of the long-term treasuries and cryptocurrency markets.
Well, Chris, I don't follow crypto as closely, but I would agree. I think that 40,000 mark on Bitcoin is important, and it's definitely a solid plus that it's back above that. When I look at the 10-year treasury market, 35 years of experience, I just scratch my head because, you know, the fact that yields have been coming down just doesn't at all square with the underlying global macro, which, as you pointed out, There are a multiplicity of factors that continue to point to higher inflation in the months ahead, and inflation just staying sticky. You look at base metal prices, zinc, aluminum, nickel, they're still strong, copper. You look at rents, owner's equivalent rent looks like it's heading a lot higher. In wages, I think there's a pretty good argument to be made that wage pressure is building. So inflation looks like it's going to be moving up, and therefore we're going to continue to move up, and therefore we probably should be seeing much higher yields. I agree with you 100%. I think that the 1.12% lows that we just saw on the 10-year yield, that could be the bottom. And I would say maybe, you know, it's possible it could stay down here a couple more days, but a move above 1.26 on the 10-year treasury, that there's a lot of resistance between 1.25 and 1.27. If we get that, I think we go to 140, 150, and then we keep moving higher. That'll be stagflationary to some degree. I mean, having high inflation, growth is still going to be strong for a while, but I wouldn't be surprised if down the line, at some point, the higher inflation on food and energy, gasoline, if a lot of that caused people to start putting their wallet on the hip and we start to see growth begin to mean revert maybe next year.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, the biggest component of the CPI index is owner's equivalent rent, which to me looks like it's heading higher. It's just, you know, I agree with you. The bond market really is causing me to scratch my head like yours.
I mean, you've got...
I don't have much hair either.
Well, I'm losing mine.
The raw industrial index, the CRB raw industrial, it hit a new high literally just a couple days ago. There's been no decline there. And, you know, just the other day, we got the ISM Service Purchasing Managers Index, and we've got data on that going back to the 1990s, and it hit its highest level ever.
So I know.
Strong economic data.
You're being too kind. The industrial commodity index is a moonshot. It's relentless.
So it really feels like the market's kind of has an identity crisis where there's just a lack of harmony between multiple measures. I mean, when you typically see economic growth accelerating, doing well, you don't really see credit spreads starting to move up, but we are right now. That could be that the move in treasuries, the yield lower, is overdone, which would impact spreads to cause them to rise. So if we do see the treasuries start to head up, that would bring in spreads and kind of confirm the overall message we're seeing in the market. So,
Chris, it's interesting you said that because I read the other day that there's an argument to be made that the decline in yields that we've seen recently has been a short squeeze in the market, and that there have been a couple of big hedge funds getting hit really hard because they were heavily wrongly positioned in the market. And that this effectively the rally in bonds, which has brought down yields, has been a short squeeze, and it really hasn't had anything to do with underlying economic reality. So it's really effectively decoupled the bond market from the core trend. And what I think we're both thinking is that maybe that begins to mean reverse.
That could certainly happen. But, you know, the nice thing about the markets is you can have a theory and you can essentially test that theory. So, you know, if that is what's going on, then we should start to see the 10-year treasury bottom here moving back above some key moving averages. We should start to see financials improve, particularly over utilities. We should start to see copper begin to really outperform gold. So, you know, there's a whole host of things that would confirm that move. But, you know, I think kind of what you were saying earlier, that Titanic example, when you don't have a clear view, you know, you've got fog ahead and it's not really clear what's ahead of you. Sometimes, you know, going slow is the best approach, which is really what we're doing here at our firm. So, Frank, you know, I want to thank you for being on and sharing your time and views. And we hope to have you on again soon. I wanted to leave it to you to put any last minute comments if there's anything that you wanted to end on.
No, Chris, I think we covered. I think I covered it all. I guess I would just throw out one last comment. I'm watching the gold price very carefully. To me, that looks like we could get down to 1,800 again, if we actually maybe the 1760, 1750 area one more time, we're hovering just above 1800 right now at 1806. If we were to sell off down there, that might be an interesting setup on some of the precious metals, where I'm beginning to see some signs that things could be coming together for a nice trade in the second half of the year. But thank you so much for having me on. It's always great to catch up.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939 or go to financialsense.com and click where it says Contact Us. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.